Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, colleagues. We're continuing on with this subcommittee of Transportation and Economic Development, Ways and Means. Robin Lamont represents Legislative Fiscal Office, and Susie Huerta is our Administrative Assistant. And yesterday, we were hearing from Director Chris Lyons, and we'd just like to open up with kind of a brief summary of where we're at today from Legislative Fiscal Office. Robin Lamont.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, today we're going to move into the annual business plan and to the budget numbers for the commission.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Lyons, and I'm the director of the Oregon Lottery. And with me today is David Hooper, public affairs manager. I spoke to Robin, and she said generally what happens is that agencies come back with answers to questions before we get back into the presentation. And you had a few questions which we can answer. There were a couple of requests that we will follow up on this week. An example is Representative Ringo's request for Attorney General's opinions, and we're gathering those. The chair asked specifically about some rankings and issues like that, and we gathered that information. I'm going to turn this to David and let him go through those pages before I go back to the full presentation.
Thank you, Chris. Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm David Hooper, Public Affairs Manager with the Lottery. We've already passed out to the members several things to talk about ranking. The first one I'll show to you is this basically white piece of paper that has video sales on it. What I've done is ranked these states in terms of per capita sales, and you'll also see what their net sales are for those jurisdictions. Oregon, of the six states on this list, ranks at the bottom in terms of video lottery per capita sales. About half of these states, Delaware, Rhode Island, and West Virginia, operate their video lottery programs basically through a series of venues like racetracks. So you'll have maybe 1,000 or 1,500 video lottery terminals at each of these locations. Montana, South Dakota, and Oregon are more comparable in terms of VCLT video lottery terminals are located in bars, restaurants, taverns, lounges. South Dakota and Montana both have coin operators, amusement device operators supplying those video lottery terminals to the establishments, and of course they receive a portion of those net proceeds. Oregon acquires and installs the video lottery terminals itself, and if you look at a page that shows some other rankings, and I'll just hold it up so you'll know which one I'm referring to. This shows some rankings, and the chair asked particularly about sales as a percent of personal income. Table number two shows traditional game sales, and that's everything but video, as a percent of personal income for the state. And you'll note that Oregon, for traditional game sales only, ranks about 23rd out of 38. I have added to the bottom of that page what the changes, how those rankings change when video lottery sales are included as part of the total sales. And Oregon moves up to number 9 in terms of sales as a percent of personal income for the state. And the last chart that I've provided to you is this one that runs landscape version, and that really provides all the information in terms of traditional game sales, in terms of personal income for the state, the population of those states. And so this is really the basis of the information that I used to calculate that percent of the personal income. So I hope that's responsive to the committee's questions from yesterday, and be glad to follow up more if there are other questions regarding those materials.
As you, as the members of the committee have had an opportunity, a brief opportunity, to look at the handouts from Mr. Hooper, are there any questions? Let's see, I note the lottery revenue expense analysis on the landscape indicates the results for Oregon include the other states that you had mentioned, I think, including Delaware and West Virginia and Rhode Island, that have video operations, video lottery operations are included in that section, so.
Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, this one overview does only reports the traditional sales, so that's why I added this one sheet that gives you what their video lottery sales were, and then did that calculation and added that as a percent of personal income. So
that's how Oregon becomes ninth with video lottery.
That is correct, sir.
Okay. Are there other questions of Mr. Hooper then? Okay, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Now let's see, it appears that there's at least a couple of other items that are handed out, and those are for today's presentation.
Yes,
that's correct. Great, thank you. Senator, I beg your pardon, Senator Yee.
I would like to ask a question. Yesterday you were telling us the commission for the video game is 32.5%?
That is the average.
Uh-huh. And for the traditional games, it was 10%?
If you're talking apples and apples, net and net, traditional games on average pay 25% net.
Mm-hmm.
Video lottery games pay 32.5% net as commissions to the retailers.
My question is, why is it different? Why do you apply 25% for one and 32.5% for the other?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, let me back up a little bit, try to put this in a little context. The commission rates that we pay for our traditional products, those are similar to, within the range, similar to what is paid nationally. And that usually runs, and that's normally calculated on gross, so it runs between 8-9% normally. When you calculate it on net, it comes out at 25%. In the video world, because it really is a different world, the video model is geared more after casino-type operations, and we actually have some information here that shows what the other states that have video actually pay, and the commission rates are, in fact, different. And when the state of Oregon legalized video and took over the video program, what was happening actually was that the coin operator and the retailer were actually splitting the proceeds. So the proceeds were somewhere closer to about 50-50. And so when we instituted our program, we frankly tried to be in the ballpark of what retailers would have been making under the old system, and also to make it consistent with what other states are paying for video. So the fact that they're different really has to do with the fact that they're very different products, that the norm in terms of what is paid is just really very different in the traditional lottery world versus the casino world. What David passed out to you is again the breakdown of the commission rate, which is at the top of the page. But if you look at the states that we were just speaking about in terms of what compensation is paid to those operators or those retailers in Delaware, the operator or the person who runs the racetrack would get 75% of net.
75%?
And in Montana, Louisiana is about 32.5%. Montana, 85%, and South Dakota is about 50-50, which is what I understand the split was when we had the gray machines in Oregon. In Rhode Island, the operators, again, these are primarily racetrack operations, get 87%, and in West Virginia, the operators get 64%. At the bottom of the page, you can see what the state's share of revenue is for in these particular states, and in Delaware, the state receives 25%, Montana 15, South Dakota 50, Rhode Island 36, the state of West Virginia 36, and the state of Oregon receives about 56% of net. And so, to go directly to your question, Senator Yee, it is just really the difference in the different types of systems that are being operated.
Chris, we gave 32% for video lottery compensation rate. So the state gets 68 minus 16, so we get 52%.
When we get to the financial statement, Senator Yee, I think this will be much easier to follow, because the 16% that we were referring to really is on growth, and the 56% that we've been talking about is really based on net. I think we'll be able to walk you through this as we look at the financial statements.
Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. As you're walking through those financials, can you also spend a little bit of time talking about how you account for depreciation?
Yes.
Thank you.
Do our best. If there are no questions.
Please proceed, Chris.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, going back to our presentation, where we ended yesterday, we were really focusing in on the early part of the presentation on the history of the lottery and how we came to be and a bit about our structure. And now I'd like to move into talking to you about our business planning process and how we, frankly, manage the agency and manage the finances and the budget of the agency. As you know, the Oregon Lottery's business planning process is a bit different than what you would find in your classic state agency. We frankly are more modeled after a business operation, and we go through an annual business planning process. Before we get down into the detail of it, I wanted to give you a higher overview of the evolution of the lottery. If you could do this, you could do this in five-year chunks, just about from 1985 to 1990, the lottery was really a startup business. After the passage of the initiative, the lottery was given about a year to get up and running, and we began with our traditional products. So we really focused that first year in putting the sales and the marketing programs together for our traditional products. Our players had high expectations. Our retailers were looking forward to these new products, and legislators, frankly, were counting on the revenue as a replacement revenue for ballot measure. Just replacement revenue in lieu of taxes. And so that first 5 years really was very intense for us. The next 5 years, from 90 to 95, we were making that transition and moving into video. Again, another high growth, very intense, sales-oriented, sales-focused time. And we were focusing on implementing the video games, hiring the retailers, getting the terminals, deploying all of that equipment, and getting that program up and running. So we were, again, trying to meet the high expectations of our retailers, of trying to get replacement games out there as quickly as possible and get revenue flowing into those retail businesses. The law enforcement community wanted those gray machines gone, and we were moving as quickly as possible to get up and running. And of course, again, because of ballot measure 5, legislators were and the recipients were looking forward to the revenue. From 95 to present, the market, frankly, had changed. In our traditional products, the market had frankly matured, where sales, as we saw in some of the graphs yesterday, sales were leveling off. Things like jackpot fatigue, and sales were not growing at the same pace the last 5 years as they had the first 10. In the video arena, sales were still growing, but then again, that growth curve began to taper because of the addition of a tribal gaming in Oregon, and you saw how the growth curve, although it's continuing to grow, was far less steep a growth than in the past. So we began to focus on how we could function as a state agency in a more mature market. That is, we began to focus on expense control. We began to focus on regulation of our retailers, putting regulatory frameworks in place, and really began to look at ourselves as a more mature business operation. So I would frankly just take the lottery era and divide it pretty neatly into those categories. The next slide, actually David does a pretty good job of speaking to this. I'm going to let him speak to this slide.
Thank you. These really are the three components in the lighter blue, which are sales, prizes, and our administrative expense, and then profits and public good. You will note that the public good really forms the foundation of all of our decisions, and I'll just give you some examples how these all work together. For example, if we were to increase our prize payout percent to a very high rate and returned a whole lot of the money back to the players, sales would go through the roof. People would think that was great. However, because we're paying out so much in prizes, although our sales would be astronomically high, our profit levels would be relatively low. By the same token, if we were to reduce our prizes, thinking, boy, we'd have a bigger profit margin, well, players would recognize that as well and say, I'm not winning, so I'm not playing. And although the percent of profit would be greater, the actual bottom line in terms of dollars earned as profit would be lower because the sales would be so low. Administrative expenses have the same effect. If we are effective in managing our expenses and running a lean shop, that becomes additional profit to the state. Conversely, if our expenses increase, that becomes a deduction from our profits. So that's how those things all work together. And again, the public good is the foundation for all of our decision making as we look at each of those issues.
So before we go into the detail of our budget, I want to give you a high-level view of, when we talk about our administrative budget, the three major components of that. Our administrative budget is really divided into three parts. It's divided into, the biggest part of it, is, of course, is our retailer sales commissions. Then our game vendor charges, and in that category, we are paying for use of central computer systems. We are paying for the leases of video terminals. And so all of the charges from our vendors who supply us the equipment or the central systems, central computer systems, fall into that category. And then, of course, the other major category is the direct agency expenses. And again, we will go over this in some amount of detail. If we were looking at the operating expenses as 100% pie, 70% of that pie is paid to our retailers in the form of commission, 10% is paid to our vendors, and 20% is used for direct operating expenses. So that is of the 100% that we would spend on our administrative budget. And the dollars associated with that is a big picture. And again, we have that detail. It's $169 million for retailer commissions, $22 million for game vendor charges, and $49 million for direct agency expenses. I wanted to talk, we talked about retailers a little bit yesterday, and so I'm going to go over pretty quickly this portion of the presentation again. We frankly view the retailers as our public sector partners. I actually look at them as the lottery's a customer. Without that retailer, the state of Oregon wouldn't make any money. And we try to serve the needs of those local retail businesses as best we can, because those retailers really do generate the sales that create all of the lottery's profits. The law does, as we talked yesterday, require the retailers to be paid a fair and reasonable rate of return. And as we've talked over the years and I've made presentations, I tend to think of the money that we pay retailers in compensation as a, frankly, a direct method of infusing revenue right into local economies. That money is spent on payrolls, on health insurance, on buildings, on equipment, and on running those businesses in the community. It's frankly, video lottery over the years has helped make the hospitality industry, the bar and restaurant and tavern industry in the state of Oregon far more stable than it was years ago.
Yes, for everything Ringo is recognized.
You know, that just doesn't sound right to me. Just a comment. Certainly you're putting that money into them, but the people that are spending those dollars would spend them somewhere else anyway. Or even better, they might put it in savings, but let's just assume they didn't. Let's assume those were entertainment dollars. Those same dollars are going to be injected in the community. It's just a matter of, is it the bar, is it the convenience store, is it the movies, is it a restaurant, is it the clothing store?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringo, I don't disagree with that at all. The point I was trying to make was that money is reinvested into the community through those retail businesses. People are being hired. Yes, I too believe that
right.
Some of those people would go work elsewhere. I do know factually that many bars, taverns, and restaurants in this state were struggling to survive and closing down, and that the revenue from video really helped stabilize that industry, keep many of those businesses running, kept people employed, and as a former administrator of the Liquor Commission, I really think that that when those retail businesses were struggling to keep their doors open, some of them actually were pushing the envelope in terms of sales to minors or sales to visibly intoxicated people because they had payrolls and they had to keep their businesses alive. I genuinely believe that frankly the pressure was relieved and that these businesses became more stable. But what I wasn't trying to say is that this money wouldn't be spent elsewhere.
You're talking video poker.
I am.
Okay.
I am.
Thank you.
Chris, a minute ago, you mentioned the bar people that are as your partners, and you are concerned about making them a reasonable income. What when you were at the Oregon Liquor Commission, I don't remember. Did you feel that same partnership needed to be there with the agents and their compensation? I don't remember.
Senator Clarno, yes, I think we took the same philosophy that we wanted those businesses to be successful, to have a reasonable rate of compensation. We also had at the Liquor Commission a philosophy that we wanted to be firm but fair in terms of the regulatory side, and we apply that here also. That really, we want these businesses, we wanted not only at the Liquor Commission, not only the liquor store operators, but we wanted the bars and taverns to be successful, and we tried to focus on that, those few bars and taverns that were violating the law, but most of those businesses were really solid businesses trying to make a living, trying to operate as good
citizens, and so we really do apply that same philosophy here. We want these businesses to be successful. We also want them to follow the law, and we try to apply both of those standards.
I didn't mean to get you off track, but we've just been doing the other budget that you used to be the director of, and I just, the first time I've had a chance to delve into that budget and understand how it works, so I wanted to see if your thought process was the same in that.
It's been 6 years, so I've forgotten a lot, but, you know, really it is the same industry, and that's where I felt pretty comfortable in talking about. I think video really did help the health of the hospitality industry in Oregon and made it less tenuous.
Can I just yes. ask one question? Relative to we're off on a little bit different item. The indication from the auditor relative to the recent audit indicates that last year more than $5 billion was wagered in poker, video poker in Oregon. If we divided $5 billion by 3.4 million citizens, we'd find out that the actual per capita sales were in the vicinity of $1,471, which is nearly three times that of Delaware's per capita sales. What's the difference? What am I reading that's wrong here? It's not $128.
Mr. Chairman, what you are reading is the difference between calculating this based on gross sales for video or net after prizes. And when we get to the financial statement, I can show you that, and it will be very clear to you. Although the $6 billion is really the real sales number, in the casino and in the video industry, it's really reported based on net after prizes. And
so the per capita sales is not per capita gross sales, it's per capita net sales.
After prizes, but before expenses. And on the traditional side, and this is just the accounting methods of the industries, those sales are reported on gross before prizes. And it will be very easy to see on our financial statements.
Okay, and do we know that the other states' reporting is identical?
Yes, this is that. We're comparing apples and apples.
Okay, thank you.
The next slide really was the compensation. We talked about this yesterday. I think the two key points are average commission rate for our traditional retailers, 8.72% on gross and 25% of net after prizes. And then the next slide, the average, again, based on gross, is 2.2%. And based on net, the video commission is 32.2%.
Representative Ringo is recognized.
How do the figures for retail compensation compare for those in other states?
I believe we gave you that handout, sir. It's right on top of your manila folder. That one right there.
Okay.
And that's on video.
This is video.
Yes.
Do we have... Okay. Well, I'll take a moment and look at it. Thank you.
The next slide really just gives you a history, a comparative history, because we're often asked retailer commissions, how the retailer commission has grown over the years as sales have grown, and then the state's a net profit as compared to the amount of money that we paid our retailers for their commissions. This informational for you.
It's basically a 2-to-1 ratio. The state gets $2 in profits for every dollar the retailers receive in commission.
The next slide, again, high level, and we'll go to the detail of the budget, shows the amount of money we spent in fiscal year 2000 on our vendors. We
spent $3.8 million with our scratch and our break open vendors. These are the people that make our scratch tickets for us. And we pay for, we have contracts with those, actually with two companies, one located in Texas and the other, I think, located in Georgia. And
neither company does business in Oregon, then?
Both of these companies make our scratch tickets for us. And so they do business with us, we do business with them. They do not have facilities here, but we work with them. They create our scratch tickets, ship them to us, and then we sell them in our retail locations. And then we pay our other primary vendor for our online games, and that is the computer system that really runs our traditional games. So our Megabucks, our Powerball games, Sports Action Game, all of those games run through a central computer system provided to us on programs written for us by this company, and we pay that company $8.8 million.
Where are they located, if I may ask?
The corporation is located in Rhode Island. They have a facility here within a mile of our building, and they have a computer system there, and they provide some services to us. They keep one of the machines that's used to actually issue these tickets in the retail businesses. They do the service on those machines for us.
But they are basically, they do have a base of operations,
yes,
then within the state.
Yes.
And do we know that they pay income tax? I assume,
yes,
that they would pay income,
yes,
tax. And are you subject to the same contract laws as the balance of the state relative to the request for proposal and qualifications and those things?
Mr. Chairman, we are exempt from the state purchasing laws. We have, of course, administrative rules. And depending on the type of contract, we go out to RFP and go out to bid on this online product, on this central system. We did, in fact, go out to bid because it's a very large and very long-term contract. And some of the key lottery central system providers bid on those contracts several years ago. But we don't always go out to bid on everything that we purchase at the lottery.
Security is paramount in all of these,
yes,
issues.
Yes, clearly.
Then in that process, if we're not subject to the bid rules that are standard within Oregon, are there companies that could provide any of these services who are in fact Oregon based?
I'll answer that if you like.
Well, I could do that.
Okay.
I was frankly trying to think if there were any companies that actually bid or could bid. At the time, no. I think there's probably one company that could bid for video lottery terminals, which is the next category, but in terms of the central systems, no. One of the statutes that we do have would have us, frankly, give preference to Oregon companies should they get involved in our bidding processes. And what I don't want to leave you with is the impression that we don't have competitive processes, because we do. One of the things I did when I came was to put a purchasing department in place, you know, that would form the checks and balances, that would use procedures. We've hired folks from state, other parts of state government to help us put these systems and structures in place. So just depends on the kind of procurement that we would be involved in, whether we use an RFP or a different kind of bidding process, or we'd select some kind of sole source provider.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Senator Yee.
Mr. Chairman. Chris, what kind of game is Pick 4 Wings for?
Pick 4, Senator Yee.
I mean, it sounds to me you have 100% winning.
Pick 4 is a daily game where you can pick four numbers, and based on a combination of those four numbers, you can win prizes. It's a game that is played a lot on the East Coast. Win for Life is a game.
Oh, For Life.
Win For Life is a game that where you pick numbers, and one of the prizes is $1,000 a week for the rest of your life. That's the grand prize of that game.
I thought the name of the game is you pick four, you win four. It's two separate games.
Isn't that a good odds?
Yeah, I like that.
That'd be a good game.
Mr. Chairman, and then the final category of our vendor charges are our video lottery vendors, and those vendors provide us with the terminals, and also there's we lease a central computer system under that category. On our operating...
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Representative Patridge?
Thanks. I had a question on your... Senator, you asked about your pick four and your other ongoing prizes. How do you pay those ongoing prizes? Do those go into some kind of fund? Do you invest in some kind of piece? It's not something that we have to continue the lottery in order to pay in the future.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, our games, of course, are all paid for by our sales. In the case of an annuitized prize, we purchase AAA treasury strips. We would then pay that prize out over time. So
okay.
We're purchasing those prizes up front, and then they pay out over time. Or a player may elect to take a cash option, which would be essentially what we would have to use to buy that annuitized prize over time. So.
Okay.
So the other category that you will see on our budget really focuses around our internal operating expenses, and those fall into the major categories that you would see on most business financial statements. That is personal services, services and supplies. The other a key component of that is obviously game advertising, a sales support, things you'll find in sales support, often equipment items that we would use in a retail business. You have plastic dispensers that are used to display our scratch tickets, signage, things like that would fall in under the sales support category. And then, of course, the other major category is depreciation.
And Mr. Chairman, I think this is where we get into the distinction between using Oregon businesses and these other businesses that are the vendors. There's probably only about a half a dozen companies in the entire world that do instant ticket printing. None of them are located in Oregon. There isn't a firm in Oregon that does that type of printing. And the same is true of the online or the central system vendors. There are probably two or three primary companies in the entire world that supply those sorts of services, none of which are located in Oregon. However, when we print a poster to hang in a retail location, that is an Oregon printer that does that type of business for us. So.
If I could just ask you about the poster, and as much as you brought that up, and I've asked this question before, Chris, so and you've answered it before, but I want to make certain that we have the response, and that is relative to the advertising that's done on billboards. It's my understanding that the billboard advertising is at various times of the year, and that you contract a long time in advance for billboard, and is the billboard, and there's some saturation billboard advertising in various parts of the state. Probably, again, this is a big business, so you've got it targeted to places where you're going to get the biggest bang for the buck, I'm sure. In that process, when you target billboard, is it targeted around the release of new games? And how do you know that in advance to make long-term contracts with the billboard signed for?
I can do this at a pretty high level, but I think David actually looked into this pretty thoroughly for you earlier in the year, so I'm going to let him speak to this. And in terms of new games, we usually know a year in advance because there's so much planning and so much work in terms of the release of the new game, so we have a pretty good sense of when we are going to offer a new game, and actually we pick a date and build towards that date in terms of our project planning. I'm going to let David speak a little bit more about how we select what areas of the state we place billboards.
Thank you, Chris. Mr. Chairman, we really have two types of billboards. We have about 15 permanent billboards, and those are dedicated to announcing the current Powerball jackpot. Those are obviously on the high traffic I-5, I-84, 217, 205, Southern Oregon, Eastern Oregon, on the freeways primarily. And those are billboards that we have year-round, year after year. And then we do have different campaigns that go on throughout the year. The launch of the new game, as Director Lyons indicated, we know a year in advance when we're going to be launching the new game, and it takes that long to do all the mechanics of developing that game. And then we have other campaigns that go on throughout the year, for example, focusing on a campaign about winners, sometimes campaigns about where lottery dollar funds go. So we know that throughout the year we are going to be doing different campaigns and make those reservations accordingly in advance.
And Representative, Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, what we do is we actually put together every year a planning calendar. So we have a planning calendar that has all of the activities for whether it be our scratch product, our keynote product, our video product, and then all of the support, whether it be the advertising or the point of sale or the billboard support, we lay those out on calendars. And it's quite the cross-functional effort for our organization to pull off all of those plans. And so we've been working very hard to do a lot more upfront planning. And to give the organization, our organization, enough time to get the work done and get it done efficiently and effectively. So we do know, as David said, well in advance what we're going to do. And frankly, if we get a bright idea and we do not drop it on ourselves in the middle of the year, the organization frankly rejects it.
If I could just ask, in that process, is there one time of the year more than any others that you are on the radio or on billboards, printing up material, those kinds of things? Where's the peaks and valleys in a 12-month period? Or the life of a game, or I guess, first of all, a 12-month period?
Sure. We do try to maintain a presence throughout the year. And again, key in terms of our advertising will be the launch of a new product. The other products that we do introduce on a regular basis are new scratcher games, and so there's advertising built in around that. When we're not introducing a new game or announcing a new scratch it, we'll then do advertising about where the money goes, because that's always the subject of interest for the citizens. We may do a campaign that focuses about recent winners. Ongoing campaign, of course, is problem gambling awareness. So we try to maintain a presence throughout the year, different intervals, and again, the focus may be a new game or the new scratch it. If we're not doing one of those, it's going to be winners or where the money goes, and throughout the year, the problem gambling awareness campaign.
And the real detail of the flow of it, I wish our marketing manager was here, because she would be able to really give you the more detail in terms of the flow of it. But over the years, we have created a flow. So you'd be able to say that in a particular time of the year, we would advertise on a billboard our winners. And the way it's staged in terms of spending the money is really something that she and her staff lay out. And frankly, my focus is more the bigger box in terms of how much money are you going to spend, and are you focusing your attention this year on billboards or on media or just how you're doing?
Are those statewide? You'll spend as much in a county of 36,000 people in Eastern Oregon as you will in Western Oregon, as you will in Southern Oregon, as you will in Northern Oregon.
It's really more based on population.
Proportional. Okay, I said that. A county with 36,000, you'll spend as much in each one of those counties, basically
on a per capita basis.
Per capita, yes. Wherever it's at.
Correct.
And so actually, your expending in your marketplace would be, per capita, you're expending as much per capita here in the metropolitan region of the state of Oregon as you are in rural Oregon.
I think that's essentially true, although, of course, the Portland Metro TV has a fairly broad reach that goes out beyond the Portland area. In fact, you can watch Channel 6 over in Pendleton. So some of those advertising dollars that we do spend in the Portland dollar carry out across the state. I actually have back in the office, and I'll deliver these to you tomorrow, the full schedule and the spending by station, by region. I'd be glad to share that with you.
I guess part of that is that some of my constituents are convicted against any kind of gambling, and I think that we probably are all faced with that. But I probably receive more concerns about state spending, not about the cars that I see driving around at the E-plates. I receive more complaints about or concerns about expenditures of dollars by the Lottery Commission for lottery advertising than almost anything else. And the reason is, number one, I don't see the governor advertising, for his program on Save the Fish or Save Families First. Well, I do see, because he's not trying to sell anything. But the concern that I've got is that when I can turn on my local radio station and I recognize I'm on a border town, and you may be advertising games that aren't being played across the border, and so you're going to perhaps maybe cater a little bit more to that market. And that's why I ask. If on a per capita basis, every county is, a county with 36,000 people throughout the state would be given equal opportunity and not have four or five times more expended in that county. Now, would your answer still be the same with regard to Malheur County and its proximity to the state of Oregon or state of Idaho with regard to the amount of money that you expend in radio, newspaper, television, and or billboard advertising? Is it still the same?
Let's best answer that when I'm able to get the actual figures, and the figures will answer that question directly. And I don't have all that fine level of detail in my brain. I know philosophically we try to spend per capita, but you're quite right. We do offer Powerball, which the state of Washington does not. And 12 of our 15 top Powerball retailers are on the Oregon-Washington border. We actually advertise Powerball in the Tri-Cities of Washington.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Butler. Under depreciation, I see that we have $6.6 million. Isn't that a non-cash expense? And if it is, where is that $6.6 million invested back into? Because I'm not seeing it added back at the bottom of the operating statement.
It would be in the balance sheet, and the balance sheet is not, the full lottery financial statement is not there. And in that business plan that you have is really the financial statement and not the full picture of not only the balance sheet but the cash flows of the lottery.
When I look at this operating statement, it's a cash statement, and you've got depreciation of $6,600,000, and you're showing that as an expense of cash coming out, and yet down under available for equity, I don't see that added back in there.
It's
a non-cash expense.
Equity, there wouldn't be available.
Yeah.
For example, your commission of, and I'm using the June 30th, 2000, you've got $168 million. That's direct dollars going out. Game vendor charge of $17 million. That's direct cash going out. I can go right down the line. Then I hit depreciation of $3,558,000. That's a non-cash expense.
Yes.
And so somewhere down under available for equity, there ought to be an additional $6,600,000 added back into that.
And actually, that would tie back, Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, would tie back to the balance sheet. This is laid out more as a business financial statement, and depreciation is, in fact, a non-cash expense. The cash was expended originally when the item was purchased, and then the depreciation schedule is created, whether it be 5 or 10 years, based on the life of the piece of equipment that you bought. It's depreciated off. that money has been captured and becomes part of the cash, and is eventually reused as a part of the cash that this lottery has.
So would it be possible?
You might want to help me.
Would it be possible then to? Excuse me, I'm interrupting. Would it be possible then to get a corresponding balance sheet so I can see where that $6,600,000
is adjusted again? We can get you a balance sheet that will tie the documents together. And our financial statements and our current balance sheets are presented to our lottery commission, frankly, on a monthly basis, and all of these things, in fact, do tie together.
There's a pot of money out there that's accruing $6,600,000.
There is
a year.
There is a pot of money that the Oregon Lottery has. We call it our contingency reserve, but there are cash balances that the Oregon Lottery uses to make investments, to pay its bills, to purchase equipment, as most businesses would. The Oregon Lottery doesn't have the capacity to borrow money, so we accumulate cash, and we use that cash to reinvest into our business operation, expense those purchases, and then reinvest that money later.
Follow up, Representative.
I'm not an accountant, but I am a loan officer. And so somewhere at the bottom of this, that $6,600,000 ought to be shown as cash that's on hand, especially when you're showing a cash statement. And so I guess I'll just wait to see the balance sheet, and then I'll look at it further.
Giving you the best answer I can, Mr. Chairman.
I think they're obviously in hand back.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
In the balance sheet that you are going to provide, Representative Smith, will that also indicate cash on hand?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, yes.
Thank you.
And can you give us an estimate as to what that is?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringo, I can't.
Okay, that's fine, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ringo.
Yesterday, I thought you put out the number $40 million was kind of in a pot for investment. Is that right?
$40 million was in a pot for investment in new video lottery terminals.
Okay, that's what that was.
Yes.
Okay.
Perhaps the net operating income, or the non-operating income following the net profit figure could be instructive. On the operating statement of June 30, 2000, it appears that there's $4.5 million of investment income. And assuming that the state was earning 8%, I don't know, that'd be an investment of $56 million that perhaps could be available for those kinds of things. But I don't know what the state...
I'm making a call right now to see if I can get our CFO.
Representative Smith?
I'd really be interested in looking at those financials, and I'd like to just take a day or two and get out my pencil calculator and just play around. And then report back.
Again, we'd be glad
to... Loan officers just like us.
provide you with information we have. As we go through the financial, we will speak to it. We'll also give you some additional information on our contingency reserve, which is one of the things you're talking about. So we will get to those issues before we're done here today.
Senator,
I'm going to try to get some additional help over here from the lottery. So,
I want to know, is gambling addiction a line item on your operating expenses or not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lee, it is not. Money that is paid to the county for treatment comes from the net profit. So it's not an expense of the lottery. It's paid out of the net profit. 1% of our net profit is used for a treatment funding, and that is administered by the Department of Human Services.
Oh, it's not part of your
part of our operating budget.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this all the expenses for your operation, because it adds up to about 46.6 million, and 16% of your revenue, assuming is 600 million per biennium, it would be 96 million. Is that correct? And this adds up to 46.6 million. So you really don't need 16% for operating expenses. That's my question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lee, although we'll get to the calculations a little later, in fact, we don't need 16% for our administrative expenses, and we don't use 16% for our administrative expenses. We use less than 4% for our administrative expenses.
4% of 600 million?
No. 4%, less than 4% of about 6 billion.
6 billion. So
I'm going to want to move to these financial statements pretty darn soon here.
Okay.
I want to give you some couple of other things.
I'll hold my question to the financial statement.
Please.
So I want to talk about FTE, give you a little history of our full-time equivalent employees and the little bit of history about that. Because I know most agencies give you that information. The lottery has somewhere around 400 employees, and give and take 20, depending on vacancies. Those employees are divided between our retail operations organization, which takes care of sales and service of our retail businesses, and our marketing department, which help us create games and manage our products. And then we have, purchasing department, a IT department, a distribution department, a finance department, and some people in the director's office, and the people in the director's office help us regulate the retailers in terms of contract compliance and provide some audit functions for us. The growth and the history of our FTE since we began the lottery looks like this. The first number in 1987, we had about, on average, about 88 employees. You can see there was quite a bit of growth in the 91, 93 time frame as we were beginning to gear up for video. And then, again, we were still doing some gearing up for video as late as 95, but from 95 to 2001, that growth is really tied more to infrastructure, some of the things I talked about earlier about creating a purchasing department, a human resources department, some things that the Oregon Lottery did not have in its early years. The next slide shows you when we translate the, I do this sort of for myself, but I wanted to share it with you, as we look at the profit, the bottom line profit that the Oregon Lottery has made over the years, and look at the number of people that we have employed, you can see that in the, our first year per FTE, if you divided our profit by the number of employees, that was $667,000 per employee that was being generated for the state. And in 1999-01, that number will be somewhere about 1.5, maybe a little closer to 1.6 million by the time we're done. So the growth of video, the growth of our employees, the growth of our sales have basically kept a pace.
Jen Johnson is recognized.
I'm just sitting here having sort of an epiphany.
Okay.
It wasn't until this last exchange that you just had that, even though I'm looking at this financial statement, that it really became abundantly clear to me that this is a $6 billion enterprise. That's three times bigger than ODOT.
Yeah.
and just all of a sudden the magnitude of it sort of became abundantly clear to me.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, that is correct, and the bulk of that money is in fact paid out in terms of prizes. And the bulk of it is paid out in video prizes. But when you calculate the Oregon Lottery sales, and you do that based on the legal definition of sales and the legal construction of what's in the Constitution, this is in fact a $6 billion a year a business. After we pay prizes, it's somewhat less than that. It's not
not
small.
Do you know how much they give out for prizes at ODOT?
Are we calling 16 miles of guardrail a prize?
In my district, I'd take it.
Help me just reconcile the numbers. You gave us two sheets. One of them is this operating statement, and then this one. Gross revenues for Oregon on the lottery revenue and expense analysis from your table one shows $113 million. How do you reconcile that with $6 billion? This must be absent the prizes.
Yes.
Right. The first figure, which would be traditional sales, that would be the third column, 323.7. Those are our gross sales. And that's pretty close to what?
Just for the traditional
product. Correct. And
there must be no video.
That's correct. This is only for, this chart only shows the traditional game.
Traditional. No correct. Video.
Correct.
And the video is the mother of all good things in this operating statement.
That is correct.
I don't know. I mean, we've been sitting here talking about this, and I looked at the number, and I thought, that's nice. And then all of a sudden, the magnitude of this enterprise is breathtaking, literally.
So Representative Johnson, if you look at that, you're looking at the 2000 financial plan. We just probably need to just go to this. When you look at the final approved budget, You were looking at something that had a $6 billion number.
Yeah, that's the operating statement. That's the six. This is the $6 billion page right here.
So which year are you looking at, Representative Johnson? Top of the page, I'll tell you.
It says Oregon State Lottery operating statement through June 30th. Net revenue basis.
Okay, so that's the 2000... budget.
2000
okay.
budget. Right. So if you look at, you can see it probably more easily if you flip to the other side of that page.
Sure.
That is our financial plan for the year 2000. And this is our operating statement, essentially. And if you look in the far column where it says final approved budget, see over here? Final approved budget over here in the far corner. That is divided into two pieces. See where it says traditional,
right over.
And then it says video, and then it says total.
Right.
If you look under the traditional column, down where it says total revenue, you'll see a number of $325,140,000.
I see it.
And then prizes that we pay for that game are $210,731,000.
Oh, and I see that prizes $5 billion, almost $6 billion worth of prizes in video lottery. It's just this is the first time that I think the real magnitude of the operation has been manifestly clear to me. It was just.
And after we pay prizes, net after prizes, the lottery's net revenue before we pay our expenses is about $550 million a year. So in a two-year period, there is about $1 billion to pay expenses, and then we turn proceeds over to the state. I'm going to move to this financial plan. As you look at this financial plan, we've presented you with a 12-month financial plan and our budget, which is on the other side, what
we translated that from the budget to what we actually spent for the year, the full 12 months ending June of 2000, and for the 8 months to date of this year. And as I mentioned to you earlier, we create those, these financial statements on a yearly basis as a part of our business planning process. So I'd like to move, if I can, and I just, we're going to move right into this financial statements because that's really where you want to go. And so I'm fiddling around with stuff that I probably shouldn't be fiddling with.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith, do you have still a question?
I do. Thank you, Chair Butler. On the prize revenue, is there a national standard for what an acceptable variance is there? I see in fiscal year 2000 we paid 91.85. How does that compare with New York State, Nevada, Montana?
There is. These types of games, when we're looking at video games, the prizes paid out on a video game will, first of all, depend on the kind of game. So a video poker game might have a different prize payout than a line game, than a video keno game, or even a video blackjack game. But the range runs from, oh, I'd say about 88% the game pays, all the way up to 98%. And
that variable?
And
is it based on chance where that'll be?
Well, in...
Or can you predict that?
Predict that.
You can predict it over time. Okay. Because these... You know, the video game is all random number generators, but you're able to predict over time what the average payout will be for a particular game. The Oregon Lottery is right in the middle of the pack. We don't have real high payouts and we don't have real low payouts. We have some games that pay out at 90%. We have other games that pay out at 94%, again, video games.
Is there a statistic?
Follow up, Representative.
Is there a statistical chance that the games could pay 98% out?
There is a chance during a short period of time on a particular machine in a particular location that the game, you know, because of luck, would pay out at 98, might even pay out at 100%. But over time, on average, they're going to fall within a statistical variance that's acceptable, right around that. In our case, we're paying out on average around 92-93% on our video games. Now, in a casino, you might find different machines set at different prizes. So, in one part of the casino, you would see the games pay out less or more, and it might be in fact the same game, but our games are set uniformly throughout the state.
Just so I understand this, just
follow up, Representative Smith.
And with a total administrative expense of 3.56, statistically, then there's a potential that if a game paid out at 98% in the short term, that the Oregon Lottery actually could lose money. If the payouts, you have 100%, payouts 98%, and your total admin expense is 3.56, there's a potential that during a period of time your cash flow would be negative.
I'll answer that. Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, Director Lyons is quite correct that over time, each machine will pay out the 92.3, 94.2, whatever that price set out is. There may be an instance where a half a dozen of our 8,800 machines that are out there are paying out at 120%. That happens sometimes. 3 weeks later, that same machine, because it's all random, will be paying out at 80%, and over time, it will pay out at 92%.
Now I understand your timeline. By short term, you're talking a couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
Not.
Yeah. And again, you have to look at it in terms of there are 8,800 of these video lottery terminals, and at any time, one of them is going to be paying out high and another one is going to be paying out low, and that's just because of the odds of certain hands being hit.
So we're going to go right to these financial statements. They are.
Sorry
to divert for a minute.
You're welcome to go
I want to go back to an issue that I've kind of been thinking about and asking you about, and that is the commissions for the retailers.
Yeah.
I've had a chance to scan the KPMG report, and it's not clear to me that the retailers need to get commissions as high as they are. And I, frankly, I appreciate the chart that shows that we're the lowest in the country. But still, I mean, there are statistics that show that, convenience specialty stores, that there's more stores reporting increased sales than decreased sales. In other words, the trend is that they do more sales for other goods simply by having lottery there. And I'm just wondering, to what extent have you explored paying a smaller commission? Is the current commission structure relying on this report, or is there something else?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringo, as I mentioned yesterday, when we created the current compensation structures, we had that study done, and we used that as a foundation for our thinking. We did two things. For our traditional retailers, that is the grocery stores, we increased their compensation. And for our video retailers, we lowered their compensation. And we believe, and the Lottery Commission believed, that the changes we made at the time were the appropriate ones. Our traditional retailers had not received a raise since 85. The price of our product was still a dollar. Sales had really begun to flatten out for that traditional product in those grocery stores, and we were looking to increase the compensation for our traditional retailers. Based on that report that we received, we actually lowered the commission rate of our highest volume retailers. Now, for video retailers, we kept the majority of those retailers whole because we believed that was a fair compensation, and we want them to make good money because we want them to sell our product. And we had discussion on our commission whether we lowered the commission for our video retailers, and we're going to lower it enough, and there was some debate, but this is what the Lottery Commission ended up with, and those commission rates are in our retailer contracts, and I think the Lottery Commission at this time is pretty comfortable, and frankly, I'm pretty comfortable that the commission rates are appropriate.
Do you have any other analysis supporting that other than this report?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringo, no, we don't. And actually, this report does not dictate to us what those commission rates should be. So we really built those based on our understanding of what the rest of the country was paying and what we believed was in the best interest of our retailers and the Oregon Lottery.
Just to follow up, I mean, I guess I'd like a real direct answer. Is there any other analysis out there supporting what you pay retailers? Because this is pretty sketchy.
It's pretty what?
Sketchy.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to interrupt you,
no,
but
go
if
ahead.
I could just
Senator.
Get a little history. I think Chris is under a little stress here with being on the public record, but I'll just share with you that in the last 10 years, there's not too many things that's ever been as high profile is trying to figure out this agent compensation, and I think that it's maybe they're not in that report, but I think that in the past there's certainly a lot of discussion and give and take on how that was arrived at. I'm not saying that should be the end of it, but I'm just saying that's a thing that I can remember has had a lot of discussion in this building. That probably doesn't make you very comfortable, but
I
know that it's been analyzed a lot.
I appreciate that, Senator. It's just that given the amount of money involved, I would think there would be a very specific economic analysis on profit maximizing.
And LFO staff might be able to help us with that.
I was just going to say that.
Even though she's about to die from a cold.
Senator Carno, members of the committee, there have been at least two bills that I know of in two separate sessions that were introduced to deal with the issue of the agent compensation, which generated a lot of discussion in this building and on the part of the folks who are the recipients of the commission. And I think it in part goes back to the discussion we had at the very beginning of this presentation, which is that the compensation rates have enabled a lot of businesses in small communities, for example, to be stable as opposed to going out of business. And there was a lot of pressure brought to bear not to to reduce those rates.
I just to respond to that, I mean, I appreciate that comment, but frankly, I don't think it's the state interest to support bars and taverns around the state. I like to go to a bar as much as anyone else and have a beer, but I don't think that's what the lottery's for. And that's just my perspective. To me, if the issue is how to make sure that this is an attractive thing for whether it's a bar or tavern or whether it's a convenience store or a grocery store to go to the trouble to have the machine in there, we're talking $170 million, and I would expect some really detailed economic analysis as to how to maximize that. And I'm surprised this is the extent of the analysis.
Representative Ringo, I wish I could give you a different answer. I have to tell you.
I don't want you to tell me if it's not there.
We looked at for our traditional retailers, we looked at the compensation being paid in other states. Mm-hmm. We made a business judgment that the compensation structure that we showed you was a sound business judgment and would help us maintain our traditional sales. On the video side, we looked at the compensation paid in other jurisdictions. We made the judgment, yes, we should lower commission. We should lower the commission for some of our highest retailers. But, you know, it's very important to us that retailers continue to want to sell video and to support that. And so we made a fundamental judgment not to reduce the commission for the majority of our retailers who sell video.
I appreciate that. Now, I will get off the subject. All I know is when Baskin-Robbins decides how much to charge for an ice cream cone, they don't guess. I think we're guessing. Anyway, that's it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Patrick. Really quick, on page 18 of the business plan, it shows that through traditional lottery games that there's a net loss of $4,297,000. I'm just curious, if we're running like a business, why are we showing a net loss on that portion of our gaming revenue?
The traditional... You're on page 18?
Yes.
The traditional product...
What we budgeted is a net loss for the year.
Mm. Yeah, so as you can see, the state of Oregon, if you look up above, if you look at the part where it talks about the traditional product and the revenue of $302 million, mm-hmm. and then you take prizes and you subtract the amount that we paid out in prizes, the state of Oregon profited $57 million on those products. When you are looking at the expenses and you're seeing that negative in terms of the loss, that has to do with the 16%, the administrative expense piece of it.
I understand what that's saying. I guess what I'm asking should we have tightened up the prize awards to ensure that we're at least breaking even?
Well, the state of Oregon made $57 million. So what we did for some of those administrative expenses is they were actually offset a bit by our video product. And that traditional product is, in fact, very expensive to support. So from an expense perspective, it went over the 16% for just those products as a group. But from a profitability perspective, Representative Smith, it was those products were in fact profitable for the state of Oregon.
I guess I'm looking at this as a grocery store and we've got lots of products on the shelves, but our scratch it Break, Open, Megabucks, Pick Four, Powerball, Sports Action, and Keno aren't generating enough revenue to offset their direct and indirect expenses, at least in this budget. And what's happening is Video Lottery is carrying that portion of games. Isn't that accurate?
Well, if...
In terms of 60.
If... So the traditional product, 84% of that revenue has to go back in prizes or to the state in terms of profit. So the state of Oregon, in fact, made $57 million on $300 million in sales. So
that's a gross income.
No,
we still have to take out the expenses associated with that.
The state of... No. Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, that $57 million was in fact transferred to the state.
I think the confusion here is that we're showing the transfer of net revenue to the Economic Development Fund. And then what remains is the operational expense, and they are not allowed to expend more than 16%. And so their cost after the transfer was higher than they are allowed to expend, but the state profited.
So the state actually got the 57. Well, this is the budget. I don't. We probably have the actual financial statement in front of you.
How come we didn't tighten up those other direct and indirect expenses to at least be a zero, rather than a loss? Why couldn't we reduce advertising, sales support, personnel services to at least make sure the state's not losing, or at least that portion of the budget is at zero rather than a loss of.
Our traditional games, Representative Smith, are not as profitable as our video games, quite clearly in terms of revenue generated. But I want you to know that the transfer occurs. First, on the traditional product, we pay the prize, and then the state gets their revenue. And then we pay our commissions, we pay all of those things, and our other expenses are, frankly, prorated. So our personal services, those kinds of things, our indirect expenses are divided based on the proportional share of sales that each of these categories total. So he's looking at the budget, but the financial statement will show the same, that
that's what I'm seeing is you've got total revenue of 302, you've got prizes of 196, transfer of 57,
uh-huh.
Total of 253, minus 302 from 253, gives you 48,330, and then the state did not reduce the direct expenses and the indirect expenses to at least ensure that we're at zero. As I'm reading this, is we're saying we're playing these games and the state's losing $4.2 million after those transfers. Okay. Well, I'm not going to take any more time. We could talk later.
So, if I could, I want to just share these documents with you and then go to the financial statements. You see a strategic plan here, and this strategic plan is a document that really gives a five-year view of how the lottery, in its interactions with the Lottery Commission, the direction that the Lottery Commission really wants our organization to go. So we sat down with our commission to try to take a view out 5 years and say, this is the direction we want the Lottery Commission to go. And I wanted to point out to you a couple of things in that strategic plan. On page 6, the Lottery Commission has told us to do three primary things. They've told us to offer a broad variety of market-responsive games that appeal to our players and strongly support our retailer success. Commission has told us to minimize the potential impact of our games on problem gamblers, and the commission has told us to develop an even more efficient and effective lottery organization. And then in the body of this document, they've told us some other things to do in terms of our products and our prize payouts, and really given us our approach over the next 5 years.
I'm just trying to get my arms around the prize payout piece and whether that's traditional, non-traditional, how you come up with those, what other states have experienced, has there been any studies done in other states versus Indian casinos, how's the lottery stay competitive in Oregon? I mean, it just seems like the prize payouts are high. Now, maybe that's not the case, but I don't know. I mean, I tried to run the numbers based upon your financial plan and things like that. It looks like you're paying out about 92% overall, and it's hard to tread between the 50 and 70% and the 97% and a breakout there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Passage, our prize payout for our traditional games, that is our scratch tickets, the Mega Bucks, the Powerball games, those average about 65%. Actually, our Powerball game actually has a 50% payout. And we are in the mid-range, and in some of those games, we actually have a little higher prize payout. So for the state of Oregon has an average of a 65% payout for traditional games. Other states might have a 60% payout. We believe that the little higher prize payout on a traditional game is actually good for business. And people tend to reinvest that money in play and are entertained more if they're getting a little higher prize payout. On our video games, our prize payout runs between 92 and 93%. And that is, if, as you would compare us to a casino, just about right for the kind of product that we have. And so if you went to Atlantic City and talked to the casinos there, their prize payout on their slot machine type games would run between 90 and 98%. So we're in the middle of the pack. We really do operate this business consistent with how other gambling operations and other lotteries do in terms of prize payout.
Can I just ask one question? You burst into a subject, and that's what you said. This was basically what, as comparing yourself to a casino, and that's what basically the audit says is that the lottery is taking, is the question is whether or not the lottery is taking sufficient steps to ensure that the lottery retailers are not offering as casinos, and that in fact that the other opinion is that found that the lottery is not effectively enforcing the rule intended to prevent retailers from operating as casinos. So we then compare ourselves to casinos as to how casinos do pay out. Is that intentional that we're not supposed to be casinos, not supposed to operate like casinos, we're not supposed to encourage casinos, but then to compare ourselves as to what the casinos do?
What is being, Mr. Chairman, what is being paid out in terms of the prize of the game and making sure that that game functions like a video lottery game or a slot type game? That's a different issue than the issue that's being described in that audit. What the audit was basically saying is that the dominant use or dominant purpose of those businesses were in fact casino operations, and that audit was really speaking about jelly type operations that were put in place in the early 90s, and we did, in fact, put the regulatory framework in place to manage those and to get those businesses back into compliance. So I was really sort of focusing on the question about the game and the payout percentages for the game. But the reality of it is that a video lottery terminal that you would find that has video poker or line games on it is, in fact, similar machine that you would find in a casino.
Okay. So I wanted to make sure that you were comparing yourself with your payouts to a casino, recognizing that that's what the people have expressed they didn't want. Representative Patrick?
Well, I guess I'm wondering, I mean, how much does the lottery commission, I mean, just a 1.5% fluctuation for video poker in your prize payouts, $100 million. And, you know, and that's a significant amount that drops to our bottom line. And I guess that would drop to the state's bottom line. I'm wondering, you know, there's got to be some weighty, huge policy decisions that surround this particular piece. And I guess, you know, taking out commissions and those other things, I mean, the payouts are what ultimately really drive the bottom line, that money that would end up in the state treasury. And so,
Mr. Chairman, I think you're
educate me a little bit about how you make this decision. I mean, the range from, I guess it concerns me that your strategic plan has video lottery from 89% to 97%. I mean, that to me, that is just a huge range with hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars difference. And if I guess, I mean, that's like setting new tax policy in the entire state of Oregon. We probably don't do that much around the edges in the House Revenue Committee. And so I guess I want to know, as a strategic business plan, why you have such a broad range.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, what the strategic plan says is that the lottery will have a moderately high payout percentage. And the reason it does is because we believe that moderately high payout percentage will do exactly what you say, which is to generate a revenue for the state of Oregon in terms of additional sales. And we have two ranges. We have a range for our traditional products, which runs from 50 to 70%. At the 50% level, you'll find games like Powerball, and at the 70% level, you'll have some of our scratch tickets, depending on the kind of scratch ticket. On the video, you'll see between 89 and 97%, and that will depend on the kind of game. So a standard poker game might have a 90% payout. Another poker game that has a bonus feature to it might have a 95% payout. And those are big decisions. And if you look at our trend in video over the last couple of years, the prize payout has gone up a bit, where we were at 90% and now we're at 92 or 93%. And what has happened as a result of that is more money has, in fact, fallen to the bottom line for the state of Oregon. And when we make those decisions, our video product manager sits down with the vendors and we make judgments about what the appropriate prize payout is. And we use information from those vendors and make a decision about how to set that game.
But, I mean, is there policies or rules for doing, I mean, if that's a $500 million swing between 89%, that's a $500 million swing between 89 and 97%. If 52% of that ends up in the state treasury, I mean, that's what we're sitting here fighting over the kicker. We're fighting over all these other things that are, you know, and that's keeping the commission structure the same. That's keeping all those things the same. And I'm asking what kind of high-level economic impacts have we looked at? What kind of things have we looked at to make some decisions about where you're setting these policies?
I'll just give you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Patrick,
we'll just look at some hard numbers. I looked at FY98 when our prize payout for video was 90%. We generated $407 million in net receipts. 56% of that became profit to the state. In FY2000, our prize payout percent was 93% higher. You'd think we'd make less money because we are paying out higher in prizes. That 93% prize payout actually generated $436.5 million in net receipts, so it resulted in a $30 million net increase in sales, which was an extra $15 million in net profits to the state. So as we went to that pie chart or that pyramid that showed the relationship between prizes and sales, by increasing prize payout enough to make it worthwhile for people to play, and as Director Lyons indicated, the more people play, the more they reinvest back into playing some more, that prize payout actually generated more, a higher prize payout actually generated more sales, higher revenues, and higher net profits for the state. And so that's, again, that balancing act that we look at, and again, trying to be market responsive. People saw the casinos paying out at 98 or 99%, Oregon Lottery paying out at 90%. Well, where's the better place to go play? By increasing our prize payout, we are actually able to generate more sales and more profit for the state. So it is that balancing act.
And those analyses are made as we make decisions about games, which we make every few years. We may make some decisions to change a game on our video machine, and we'll make those judgments with our vendors as we are trying to select games to put on these machines. And there's a point beyond which we don't want to go, because you could again have the prize payout so high that the state of Oregon might actually lose money. So the experts within our organization are able to work with the vendors and make these decisions, and at this point, we think we're making pretty good decisions because the revenue has continued to, you know, steadily increase, and the state of Oregon is continuing to profit from the operation of the lottery.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Ringel.
I mean, just a follow-up. I guess I would expect the same sort of analysis on the commissions for the retailer. I mean, this is just a typical economics question. If you price it too low, you're not profit maximizing. If you price it too high, you're not profit maximizing, just like ice cream cones. And I would expect that there is some detailed analysis. And is there?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the games and the prizes and the return to the state are evaluated quarterly as part of the overall revenue forecast that is done for the state of Oregon. The Department of Administrative Services economic analyst looks at these things. They have economic analysts on board. If a game is not producing the revenue that is forecast, then the Lottery Commission looks at it. DAF will identify that there are problems going on, legislative revenue and legislative fiscal participate. So there is an ongoing evaluation of the games and what they're producing, at least in terms of the revenue that is transferred to the state board.
And what we do also is we work very hard to set a revenue commitment and to run our operations so that we can meet those revenue commitments and meet those transfer commitments. And any additional revenue that we may make during that year, that money, in terms of savings, is transferred to the state so that the state does get benefit of the additional revenue that's generated during the year.
I just had one final question that has been mulling over in my mind, and that is that frequently we'll see legislation come forward indicating that the games are must carry some sort of caveat that they're not to be paid for played for investment, that advertising must be a certain number of
percentage of letters I am in relationship with those kinds of things. The Oregon Lottery Commission really doesn't deem that it's subject to any of that, other than just by courtesy, or do you do so? Do you do so of your own motion?
Mr. Chairman, the statute that tells us the language that we should put on our billboards, that is law, and we follow that law, okay. And it is.
So those are amendments to Chapter 15.
Those are amendments to the statutes, and we do not believe that those will unduly prevent the lottery from fulfilling out its constitutional obligations. So we follow those.
In that instance, state law originally required only that the odds be posted on the tickets and on the advertising, and the 99 session, the disclaimer, lottery games should be played, or based on chance, should be played for entertainment only and not for investment purposes, was added to statute. That's now law. It's now on all of our tickets and now on all of our ads.
It doesn't modify the constitutional mission.
No.
Or anything of that nature.
Mr. Chair, might I ask before the members disappear, is there a desire to have the commission come back? And if so, what information is it that the committee would want?
I need to express on behalf of the full Ways and Means and on behalf of this particular subcommittee that we are gratified to have you come. We recognize that you're under no mandatory obligation to do so, that you've done so placing yourself at the merciless batch of questions
you're
been able to barrage you with. I would like to pull the members individually, if I may, and see after they've had an opportunity. We've got a lot of material that is basically first-time material for a number of the members. Not to mention the fact that we have new members from the House and even one new senator, even though she's a senior senator. But we also recognize that we'd like to have an opportunity, and based upon that, maybe we could extend for a later time an opportunity, and or I think that this may have opened up the opportunity to know now who the Chris Lyons is at the other end of the communication, and so that we'll know and can contact these folks with questions that our constituents may have.
What I would like to do is to give you, we could bring over the statement of cash flows, and if you would take a look at that, we can either do that in this committee, or we can actually come and sit down, and I'll bring people in a room and let you ask whatever questions you want. So,
AGs of the process.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming.
Senator Yee, did you have a question of any further?
Well, I just basically want to know whether there's any advantage in lowering the 16% of sales.
That would be constitutional.
Yes, so that we can get more revenue. But I want to
know if there's any advantage.
Why don't we go ahead and close, and then we'll discuss that. We'll close.